And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X-1.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here. On a Saturday, May 7th, 2016, program 75 of the WGN Radio Theater. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Carl. You say 75, and I'm just dumbfounded by
that
number.
You're dumbfounded.
Dumbfounded, not dumb.
No, I didn't say that.
I know, dumbfounded.
Yes, and you know what? We have a spotlight tonight, all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning, on Robert Young. Of course, we remember him as Marcus Welby, M.D.
Yes, indeed.
And, of course, as Jim Anderson on Father Knows Best. And Father Knows Best was a radio show before it was a television show. So we will start things off with Father Knows Best in just a few minutes. Then you'll hear Robert Young in Suspense. And then on a very interesting radio show called the CBS Radio Workshop. And I'll tell you more about that later. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the adventure sci-fi Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows as the turtles return to save the city from a dangerous threat.
All right, if you can identify this celebrity, you're going to win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza, the best pizza on the planet. Call us at 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You can hear her here as Desi talking to Leslie Mann's character, Debbie. In her, I said that wrong.
Yes,
heard here
you
as
did.
Desi. Desi talking to Leslie Mann's character, Debbie, about her bosoms in 2012's This Is 40.
Desi and Debbie.
Here's a clip. Maybe not. All right, well, we have callers even without the clip, so.
By the time I'm 40, these are going to go National Geographic on me.
There it is. There's the clip. Call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Let's talk to Diane from Chicago. Hi, Diane.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing great.
Great. I'm guessing you know that celebrity voice.
I believe that is Megan Fox.
And you are right. You know what you've won, right, Diane?
Lou Malnati's.
Yes, a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. You can check them out at loumalnati's.com, check out their menu, and visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Have a delicious pizza on us, okay?
I would love to. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in and for listening.
I want to acknowledge that we have Sean Davis producing the show tonight. Hey, Sean, what's up, buddy? Good to see you. And we have, hello there.
You're keeping him so busy, he's got no time back there.
Poor guy. We got him jumping through hoops. And then Mike Estella, our executive producer, is here as well. So, and the vivacious Lisa Wolf.
Yeah, you got us all jumping through hoops.
All right, we're here.
Just sit and relax. Okay. We'll jump for you.
Can I just chill then? I don't have to do anything?
Not much.
All right. So we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning every Saturday and Sunday here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN with the WGN Radio Theater, where we play your favorite classic radio shows. We're spotlighting Robert Young on this edition. And we're going to start things off with Father Knows Best. It was a situation comedy, remembered primarily as a TV series. It started on radio, though, in 1949. It was set in the Midwest. Robert Young was General Insurance Agent Jim Anderson. His wife was Margaret. His daughters were Betty and Kathy, and his son was Bud. It was typical sitcom fare, and the radio show lasted until 1954, the same year that it moved to television. Robert Young, Lisa, was the only cast member who made the transition to television. Everybody else was replaced. The TV version lasted until 1960. And we have an episode for you now, radio show from September 7th, 1950. This is called An Efficient House. It stars Robert Young in Father Knows Best.
Mother, is Maxwell House really the only coffee in the world?
Mm. Well, your father says so, and your father knows best.
Yes, it's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons. Brought to you by America's favorite coffee, Maxwell House. The coffee that's always good to the last drop. If an arrow rises, it must fall. If a river flows, it must bend. And be they long or be they small, all vacations have an end. In Springfield, which is still an average town, live the Andersons, just an average American family with the average American trials and tribulations. Their car is rolling rapidly toward the white frame house on Maple Street. And as they return from a long summer holiday at Round Lake, it might be interesting to note the thoughts which occupy their minds. For instance, there's Kathy, aged 9.
Gee whiz, next week we have to go back to school.
Bud, who is 15.
Gosh, next week we have to go back to school.
And Betty, who is a very adult 17.
Jumping creepers, next week we have to go back to school.
Then, of course, there's Margaret, the mother of the brood.
Next week, the children go back to school.
And last, but by no means least, father himself, Jim Anderson.
Well, it won't be long now. Here's Maple.
There's Jimmy Woody. Jimmy!
Sit down, will you?
Bud, stop pushing.
I'm not pushing. Kathy's standing on my foot.
Kathleen, sit still and behave yourself.
I was saying hello to Jimmy.
There'll be plenty of time for that. Jim.
Hmm?
Are you sure everything's all right at the house?
Of course everything's all right. Why?
Well, you look just like a boy with his hand in the jam pot. And if you've done anything...
Susie! Yoo-hoo, Susie!
Oh!
Kathy, sit down.
That was Susie.
Well, you don't have to jump out the window.
Look what she did to my shoe.
I did not.
You certainly did.
I certainly didn't.
You certainly did.
I certainly didn't.
Kathy, will you please stop screeching in my ear?
I wasn't screeching in your ear.
You certainly were.
I certainly wasn't.
All right, that's enough.
Well, she said I was screeching in her ear.
I said that's enough.
And I wasn't.
Hey, there's the house.
Well, that's a relief.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, nothing. It's just that when you get that peculiar look on your face, I never know what to expect. I thought maybe you had the house painted purple or something.
Now, see here, Margaret.
Jim, I know you mean well, but whenever the children and I go away, you get such weird ideas about the house.
Oh, like the barbecue pit I built last summer. I suppose that was a weird idea.
No, it was fine, until it fell apart.
How about the year you decided to turn the playroom into a bowling alley?
Never mind.
Or the year you painted the living room green and Mom had to send all the...
I said never mind.
Oh, gosh, I was only trying to help.
Kathleen, right after dinner, you go to bed.
But I didn't say anything.
I know just what you were thinking, and I won't stand for it.
Thinking about the fire alarm you built in the oven?
Kathy!
But I wasn't!
Well, don't just sit there, Bud. We're home. Let's get the luggage into the house.
Okay, Dad.
Man takes a little extra pride in his home, and what happens? People make fun of him, treat him like the village idiot.
Oh, Jim, we weren't making fun of you.
You certainly were. You thought I was going to paint the house purple.
No, I didn't, dear. I merely said...
Joe! Hey, Joe!
Bud, come back here. Where do you think you're going?
I just saw Joe Phillips.
Well, take a look at the suitcases. They come first.
Holy cow.
Kathy!
Yes, Daddy?
That is not where we live. This is our house, the white one.
But I thought Patty Davis was home.
You can see Patty in the morning, dear. Right now, we've all got to help your father.
Gee whiz.
Well, I guess that's about everything.
Jim.
Margaret, there's nothing to worry about. I haven't done anything to the house. Nothing much, anyway.
Oh, dear.
Kathy, push the water bottle under my chin. It's slipping. Want me to carry it? Just push it over a little. Oh, why can't I carry it? Kathy! It broke.
I don't know. People go away all the time and come home all the time. They don't get into things like this. Only this family. If we so much as go across the street...
Dad, these bags are getting heavy.
Well, put them down.
Don't you want me to take them inside?
Naturally, I want you to take them inside.
How can I take them inside if I put them down?
Margaret.
It's all right, dear. I have my keys. There we are.
Kathy, hold the screen door open until we get in.
Yes, Daddy.
See if you can manage not to break it.
Well, how can you break the screen door?
I don't know, but don't try to find out. All right, bud, let's go.
Oh, I don't think I can make it. This little bag feels like it's got rocks in it.
Kathy, what have you got in your suitcase?
Rocks.
Rocks?
Special rocks. I'm saving them.
Ye gods, we haven't got enough rocks in Springfield. She has to bring a suitcase full of them back from Round Lake.
But they're all different colors.
Bud, take them out in back of the garage and dump them.
Okay.
But it's practically a collection. I saved them all summer.
Well, dump them carefully, Bud.
Okay.
And don't break them. Mother, my arms are falling off.
All right, dear, we're going right in.
Let me get this bag through the door, will you? Yeah, that's a good girl.
Oh, well, we're home.
How does it look?
Well, it looks wonderful. Simply wonderful.
I had Mrs. Nielsen come in last Friday and give it a good cleaning.
Oh, that was very thoughtful.
I don't see anything different. Do you, Mother?
No, dear. Everything looks just the way it should.
Phew. Gosh, these coats are heavy.
Oh, Betty, you can't just dump them in a chair like that. You know where they belong.
Okay, I'll hang them up.
Just a minute, Betty. I've made a few little changes around the house. Just minor changes.
Jim?
Well, it's something I've had in mind for quite a few years. You see, the way I figure, there isn't much difference between a home and an office, so far as efficiency is concerned, anyway.
Jim, a home isn't like an office. You can't run them the same way.
Of course you can. And wait till you see what I've done. Everything's neat and tidy and orderly, the way things ought to be.
I hope you know what you're doing. All right, Betty, put the coats in the closet before they get all wrinkled.
Okie-do.
And then see what happened to Bud and Kathy.
If nothing has, do you mind if I arrange something?
Stop talking and do as you're told.
Yes, Father.
That girl can talk more and say less than any 10 people in Springfield.
Jim.
And she certainly doesn't get it from my side of the family, I'll tell you that.
Jim.
I've never heard anyone talk so much in my entire life. All the way down from Round Lake. Talk, talk, talk.
Jim. Oh, silent one.
Yeah?
Do you mind if I say something?
Of course not. You know that's a ridiculous question.
Well, I have another ridiculous question. What have you done to the house?
I've instituted a little system, that's all, and it's about time.
Mother, there aren't any hangers.
There certainly are. They're in the box.
The hangers are in a box?
That's right. There's nothing that looks sillier than a bunch of empty coat hangers. Besides, they don't do anything but catch dust.
What box?
The box under the box with the galoshes.
Jim, it's taken me 15 years to train the children to hang up their coats. And now you've hidden the hangers.
No, I haven't. I put them where they belong. It's part of the system.
You haven't rearranged the entire house that way, have you?
More or less.
Oh, Jim.
Now, don't get upset, Margaret. The least you can do is give the system a chance.
But if you aren't home, we'll never be able to find anything.
Yes, you will. I spent a whole week making a catalog. Everything is entered in its proper place. Dishes, silver, linen. Everything's been put away systematically and entered in the catalog.
Jim Anderson, do you mean that in order to find a plate in the cupboard, I've got to look it up in a catalog?
That's right, under C.
C? Dishes under C?
I filed them under China.
That is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard.
It isn't ridiculous at all. You've been complaining for years that you haven't had enough closets. Well, when I got through rearranging things, I had two closets left over.
I'm not going to say a thing, not a single thing. At this moment, I don't dare.
Father, the door to the basement's locked and there isn't any key.
The key is where it belongs with all the other keys. They're all tagged, labeled, and filed very systematically.
Where?
Margaret, I wish you'd stop looking at me that way. I was merely trying to be helpful. I know it isn't easy to get used to a new system, but you will.
Say, Dad.
I want to give it to him.
Here's a letter for you, Dad.
Oh, thank you.
It was special delivery, and I signed for it.
It's from the bank.
So I see. Now, where do you think a bank would be if they didn't have a system? They'd be broke in a week.
We're not running a bank.
No? Well, when some of the bills come in from the department stores... No, it's impossible.
What's the matter, Father?
Is something wrong, dear?
I'm not overdrawn. How could I possibly be overdrawn?
Well, they have a system.
Margaret, this is not a joking matter. The day I left for Round Lake, just a week ago Friday, I deposited over $700. Now, how could I be overdrawn?
Maybe their system didn't work.
You're darn right it didn't work. Just as soon as I find my checkbook...
Isn't it in the desk drawer?
No, I put it someplace else.
Part of the reorganization?
Yes, I put it in a much more logical place. A very logical place. Only I can't remember exactly where.
Why don't you look it up in the catalog?
The catalog?
Well, that's where you entered everything, isn't it?
Well, you see, that's what I've been trying to tell you, Margaret. I was trying to get everything ready for you and the kids when you got home, and I had the catalog all finished and everything, but...
Jim, you didn't.
Uh-huh, I lost it.
Oh, no!
That's the first portion of Father Knows Best, September 7th, 1950, starring Robert Young. We are saluting Robert Young on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a break, then it's more.
Oh, there we go, a little like 70s
tune. Is that Fame or what is that? I don't
know. No.
What is that from? I like it. Whatever it is, I like it. I like
Earth,
it,
Wind, and Fire.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. Yeah, I love it. Ah, makes me happy to hear that kind of music.
You weren't happy before?
My youth.
Your youth?
Which was wasted on me because I was young. I would love to have it now while I'm a little older and can appreciate it.
I know.
You know how that's kind of a mind bender there when you think about that, though. Right, Lisa?
With what we know now and mm-hmm. then go back to then, that yeah. would make all the difference. Wow.
Would you have better dancing moves now then?
No, because I can't dance. Mm-mm. I sort of look like Elaine, but the male version. You know?
I love Elaine.
I know. All right, so Robert Young is the man we are saluting on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. He did a lot of radio and TV. It was real easy to pick shows for him because he was on all kinds of stuff. He liked working, I'll tell you that. I mean, he was guests on all kinds of comedy shows. He did tons of dramatic radio, did suspense multiple times. And we are listening to him on his signature radio and TV series, Father Knows Best. This is called An Efficient House. On this series, Lisa, his wife was played by Jean Vanderpyl, and that is the same actress that voiced Wilma Flintstone on The Flintstones.
And yeah? She's something else.
Yeah, so you'll recognize her.
She did a lot of radio, too, didn't she?
Tons of radio, yeah. These were sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee, as heard on NBC. Let's go back to September 7th, 1950, for the conclusion now of Father Knows Best.
It's only minutes later in the white frame house on Maple Street
and the future looks dismal and dark for the family known as Anderson. Father, with his brilliant new system, has disorganized the entire household. But it won't be for long. You know how it is with life. It's always darkest before the dawn. And though everything may seem quite grim at the moment, there's really no need to be concerned. Just hang around for a little while, and gradually things will get worse.
Mother, I can't find my skates.
They're in the basement.
But the door's locked.
I know.
Jim, the first thing we've got to do is find the keys. We can't live in a house where everything is locked up.
If I could only remember what I did with the catalog.
I'll settle for the keys. Can't you remember where you put them?
I put them in a drawer.
Which drawer?
I don't remember. Anyway, I locked the drawer, so what good would it do if I did remember?
You locked the drawer with all the keys in it?
Well, naturally. Then I put that key somewhere else.
Where?
In a towel. I think it was a towel. Maybe it was a pillowcase.
Jim.
But it's all written down in the catalog. If we can find that, there'll be nothing to worry about.
Except trying to get this house back in order again.
Margaret, there's one thing you refuse to recognize. Doing it my way, I had two closets left over.
And there's one thing you refuse to recognize. We have two trunks and five suitcases to unpack. How many closets do you think we'll have left over then?
Oh, I guess I forgot about that. Well, anyway, I tried. Oh,
I'm not worried about the closets. At least they're open. But all those locked drawers and missing keys, what are we going to do about them?
We'll have to make a thorough search, that's all. Bud!
He went out to get the rest of the luggage, dear.
Anytime the doorbell rings, he manages to do something else.
But you sent him for it.
Well, how did I know the bell was going to ring? Haven't even been home 15 minutes. You'd think people would have the decency to let you get your hat off before they start ringing the doorbell.
Jim, my boy!
Oh, hello, Mr. Gribble. Come on in.
I'm not interrupting anything, am I?
Oh, no. We were just sitting around playing a little game of button, button, who's got the button.
Yes. Jim, I've got news for you, the most wonderful news you've ever heard.
It wouldn't have anything to do with a catalog, would it?
What?
Well, that's sort of a key subject around here right now.
I see.
Who is it, Jim?
It's Mr. Gribble, honey.
I can't stay very long. Just stopped by on my way to the club. Saw the car in the driveway, you know. Oh, hello, Mrs. Anderson. Nice to see you back.
Oh, it's nice to be back. That is, it might be. Sometime soon.
Yes. There's no place like home. That's what I always say. The old familiar haunts with everything in its place and a place for everything.
Isn't it the truth?
Yes.
You said something about good news, J.P.
I did? Oh, yes, I did, didn't I? Jim, my boy, I've done it. Yes, sir, after 3 years, I've finally done it.
No.
Yes.
Well, that's great. What did you do?
Why, I've gotten the Springfield Athletic Club to open its membership list. Not far, mind you, just far enough to let you in. Now, what do you think of that?
The Athletic Club? Oh, that's wonderful, J.P. It really is, isn't it, Margaret?
Oh, yes, I'm just goosebumps all over.
I'm finally going to get into the Athletic Club.
Well, I've got to get down there right away, so if you'll just let me have a check for $125.
A check?
For your application, my boy. I want to get it in before they change their minds.
You want me to give you a check?
What's the matter with you, Jim? Don't you want to join?
Oh, yes. I wanted to join for the last 5 years.
Well, then stop staring at me like a congenital moron and give me a check for $125.
A check for $125.
Mr. Gribble, we might as well tell you...
I left my checkbook at the office. That's what we wanted to say. Wasn't it, Margaret?
I guess so, dear. If that's what you say.
Well, there's nothing criminal about that.
Of course not. I'll drop by the bank first thing in the morning, and then I'll leave a check at your office. How'll that be?
Oh, that won't be necessary.
It won't be any trouble, J.P. And I don't think it's right for you to lay out all that money.
Who said anything about that? You bank with the merchants, don't you? Well, here's one of my blank checks. You can use that.
Oh. Well, is that you, Bud?
I guess so.
Well, come on in, Bud. Mr. Gribble's here.
Jim, if you'll just make out a check for $125.
I want you to meet Bud, J.P. He's a fine boy.
I met your son when he was 2 years old. Now, if you'll just make out a check.
Bud, you know Mr. Gribble, don't you?
Sure. How are you, Mr. Gribble?
I'm beginning to wonder.
Jim, Mr. Gribble's a great baseball fan, Bud. Why don't the two of you talk about baseball while I get on the phone?
I don't know one end of a baseball bat from the other. All I want... Look, I'll make out the check, and all you'll have to do is sign it. How will that be?
Oh, that'll be fine. Just fine.
I've got all the bags in, Dad. Now can I go see Joe?
No. I want you to stay here and, why don't you get Mr. Gribble a drink?
What kind of a drink?
Well, any kind of a drink. Water, anything. I don't care. How about a nice glass of water, J.P.?
Thank you, no.
Well, go ahead, Bud. Get Mr. Gribble a glass of water.
He doesn't want any.
We'll get it for him anyway.
Holy cow.
All right, Jim. It's made out. Now, all you have to do is sign it.
Yes. Betty, Kathy, Mr. Gribble is here.
Jim, why don't you just tell him...
Betty, Kathy, can't you hear me?
What's the matter, Father?
I just told you, Mr. Gribble is here.
Good for him.
Well, don't you want to say hello?
Hello, Mr. Gribble.
Hello, Betty.
How about Kathy?
Hello, Mr. Gribble.
Hello, Kathy.
Friendly little group, aren't we?
Jim, why don't you come down and tell Mr. Gribble all about the nice summer you had?
Jim.
Tell him all about it, one day at a time.
Jim.
We're trying to find the key.
Never mind the key.
Mother, Mrs. Nielsen didn't dust under the bed.
Never mind Mrs. Nielsen.
Jim, Mr. Gribble...
Never mind Mr. Gribble.
Where? Oh, I guess I'll be running along.
No, wait, I haven't signed the check.
Oh, you remembered that.
Jim, I'm sure Mr. Gribble
okay,
would...
Okay, I'll just sign it. And... Well, there you are, J.P., and thank you very much.
Not at all. It'll be nice having you in the club. I imagine.
I'll take you to the door.
Goodbye, Mrs. Anderson.
Goodbye, Mr. Gribble. I'm sorry everything was so upset.
That's quite all right. Quite all right. Jim, my boy.
Yes, J.P.?
When you come down to the club, I take things easy for a few weeks.
Oh?
You seem to have been overdoing things a little.
I know what you mean, J.P. I'll be careful.
Yes. Well, I'll be running along. Well,
thanks again for everything.
Oh, not at all, my boy. Glad to help.
Well, I've joined something. The Athletic Club, or Leavenworth, one of the two.
Jim, what on earth were you trying to do?
I don't know, Margaret. I thought if I could get Bill Morris on the phone about that deposit I made...
But why didn't you tell Mr. Gribble the truth? I'm sure he'd have understood.
I couldn't, Margaret. Would you trust all your insurance to a man who can't keep his bank account straight?
I thought the bank made the mistake.
They did. I mean, I think they did. I don't know.
Here's the water, Dad.
What water?
You said to get a glass of water for Mr. Gribble.
Well, he's gone.
What'll I do with the water?
Drink it.
I'm not thirsty.
Then take it outside and water the lawn.
With one glass?
Jim, you're getting the boy all confused.
Well, what do you think I am? No money, no catalog, no keys. Wait a minute.
Now what?
The middle drawer in my desk. That's where I put it.
That's where you put what?
I don't know. But I distinctly remember putting something in it. The catalog. That's where it is. Come on.
Jim.
Once we get the catalog, everything will straighten out. We'll find the bank book and the keys and... Uh-oh.
Is it locked?
Yes, it's locked. Everything's locked. But don't worry, I'll fix this. Where's the letter opener?
Oh, Jim, you'll ruin the desk.
Well, I've got to get it open. Here.
Oh, your poor desk.
You see, I knew I put it someplace.
Is it the catalog?
Well, not exactly. It's the check I was supposed to deposit.
Again, it's moments later in the white frame house on Maple Street. And only one of the Andersons' many problems has been resolved. Father, who always knows best, has taken care of the money situation. But it's Mother, the gentle soul, who takes care of the rest, like this.
Jim, we've got to go about this thing logically. Now, where were you when you finished the catalog?
In the kitchen. I wound up with the pots and pans. Mm-hmm.
And then the phone rang.
How do you know?
Well, didn't it?
Yes, but how...
Dear, whenever you lose something, the telephone has always just rung.
Well, then what happened?
It was Hector Smith, wasn't it?
Yes, but I still don't
see... You and Hector made a poker date. And you had to make a few notes, didn't you?
That's right. I had to put down the address and the time.
And you also put down the catalog.
Well, I couldn't write with my hands full.
Now, let's see. What handy spot would be the most illogical place for you to put it?
I put it right on the telephone table. And then it disappeared.
Betty!
Yes, Mother?
Look on top of the valance over the hall window.
Margaret, you know that's ridiculous. Who in his right mind would stick a book away on top of a window valance?
You would.
I certainly would not.
Mother?
Yes, Betty?
I found the catalog.
On top of the valance?
That's right.
Thank you, Betty.
Okey-doke.
Well, I guess everything's all straightened out now.
Not quite, dear, but it will be. As soon as we put everything back where it was in the beginning.
Join us again next week when we'll be back with Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson, with Roy Bargy and the Maxwell House Orchestra, and yours truly, Bill Forman. So until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's favorite brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. Father Knows Best was transcribed in Hollywood and written by Ed James. Now stay tuned in for Dragnet, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
Theater Guild returns Sunday. Listen next for Dragnet on NBC.
That is Father Knows Best from September 7th, 1950, An Efficient House, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson with Gene Vanderpyle as his wife on that, Ted Donaldson in the cast, June Whitley, and it was sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee, as heard on NBC. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf to my right. Mike Estella's here. And Sean Davis is our producer tonight. Sean, it's great to have you here. Appreciate you coming in and pitch hitting for Shane Ritter, who had to take the night off. So thank you. Thank you very much. You would probably home watch the Cubs game, right? You're watching the Cubbies. They won tonight. And then you get the call and you're like, oh. I got to go into work till 2 o'clock in the morning.
I was actually at a cheer competition at Great America.
You were at a where? A cheer competition?
Yeah, for my
daughter. Temperature cheer?
Yeah.
Oh, no, for your daughter? How old's your daughter?
She's 13.
Oh, that's great. And you drove all the way in here for this? You are awesome,
team
buddy.
Player,
thank
right?
you very much. We really appreciate it. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Holy Isabella, I like this kind of music, Lisa. Fantastic. You know that?
Right.
It's fantastic.
Do you know what that is?
Keeps me awake.
You know what it is?
No.
I think
that's the Rolling Stones. I could be wrong. Is it?
Oh, right. Nice job.
I am right for once, Lisa. For once
usually get the music
in
wrong.
My life.
That's pretty impressive.
I am right.
Once in your life.
You know what? That gets me rocking.
I think Sean held up a sign for you.
Rocking and rolling and I stopped yawning. I was kind of, I'm a little tired tonight.
Yeah, well, I'll keep you up.
All right. The music's keeping me going.
Okay, and me.
All right. So it is 12:07, and that means we're into hour two. So good morning.
Good morning.
It's Sunday.
Happy Mother's Day
It's Sunday,
me.
Right? Happy Mother's Day.
Thank
That's right.
You.
Happy Mother's Day four times over.
Yes.
You should get a hobby.
Yeah.
And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers
yes.
out there.
Happy Mother's Day.
That's right. And we
Thank
have
you.
We have a tribute to Robert Young. Suspense coming your way with Robert Young. And then a little later, a passion play, a really cool religious radio drama on the CBS Radio Workshop with a terrific cast that includes Robert Young. And all of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This professional boxer has a cameo in the drama Me Before You about a girl who forms an unlikely bond with a paralyzed man who she's taking care of.
All right. If you know who this celebrity is, he's a celebrity boxer.
Yes, he is.
Give us a call, 312-981-7200. You'll win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. Here he is talking about his upcoming fight against Sonny Liston.
If you like to lose your money, then be a fool and bet on Sonny.
All right, give us a call if you know who that is, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
You found us. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
Your money, then be a fool and bet on Sonny.
And we've got Martin. Hey, Martin, are you working at O'Hare Airport?
I am, actually. I'm just driving a cab and praying for a return.
Oh, gosh. Well, drive carefully, but we're glad you called in, and we're hoping that you know that celebrity's voice, or boxer's voice, actually.
He's a celebrity.
He's a celebrity.
That would be Muhammad Ali, although back then, I don't know if he was still calling himself Cassius Clay.
You know what? You should get extra credit for that, because that's exactly right. That clip, he was still Cassius Clay. And then he changed his name to Muhammad Ali. But you win. You win a pizza.
You get an extra delicious pizza on there. What do you like on your pizza?
Mushrooms.
Okay, then we're going to get a pizza with extra mushrooms.
Is that because you're a fun guy?
Actually, that's because I'm a boring guy.
No. Wait a minute.
I like on it is the cheese and the mushrooms.
Oh, what happened there?
Anywho.
I hit something that didn't.
I'm so boring, you can't even listen to me finish my statement.
Wait, hang on, I'm going to do it again. Is that because you're a fun guy? Ah, there we go.
All right, we're gonna just laugh a little at that one and pretend to laugh. Martin, we're so happy that you called in and that you won a delicious Lou Malnati's pizza. We're going to make sure it has extra mushrooms on it because you deserve it. And thank you so much for listening. We hope you'll check out one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and look up their menu at loumalnati's.com. Hey, Martin, thanks a lot. Have a great night working, okay? Drive carefully.
Thank you.
Take care.
Boy, Lisa, you like to talk, don't you?
What?
You're a talker.
Me?
This is good that you're on this radio station.
Why?
Because you can talk.
You know, this is my little moment. You are the one talking.
I love it.
Here you go. Do the show.
Well, it is Mother's Day, so you should be able
to
talk.
Should be a little extra nice.
No,
today.
I am. I'm very nice. You could talk the whole rest of the show.
I don't think that's what they want. I'm thinking they want a little Robert Young.
I'll be back in June on Father's Day.
All right.
Sound
well,
good?
Luckily we've got an episode of Suspense from June 6, 1946 called The High Wall, of course, starring Robert Young.
Right. And what about Suspense? Tell us a little bit about it.
I'm not going to be tested on
here. What? Tell us a little bit about Suspense.
Well, it does have a famous creaking door.
No, it doesn't.
Oh.
That's Inner Sanctum.
Okay, I'm going to go home now.
So what year did it start on the radio, Lisa?
Well, you've got your notes in front of you.
What are you talking about? I don't need the notes here. I'll turn them over.
You already saw.
All right, we're going to listen to Suspense. Now, 1942 is when it started on radio, lasted to 62, and it's considered by many to be the best mystery drama series of the golden age of radio. And all the big stars, including Lisa Wolf, appeared on Suspense. Henry Fonda, Jimmy Stewart, Humphrey Bogart, Betty Davis, Orson Welles, they all were on Suspense. Happy Mother's Day, Lisa.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
And we have an episode for you now from June 6, 1946. It's called The High Wall. It's sponsored by Roma Wines, which I could use some right about now. It's aired on CBS. Here's part one of Suspense.
Now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present Suspense.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Robert Young as star of The High Wall, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you Robert Young in a remarkable tale of suspense.
I woke up in bed. Nothing strange about that, except that it was a hospital bed. I couldn't imagine how I got there. I didn't remember any accident. I didn't feel sick. Why the hospital? I laid there trying to puzzle it out. Last night was Christmas Eve. I was stopping at the Beacon Hotel in Boston. I was going to get up early this morning and go to Fitchburg and find Helen, my wife. After 3 years of separation, it would be nice to be with her again on Christmas Day. I turned in bed and looked out of the window. Christmas? Why, it was summer. There were trees and grass and flowers in bloom. I guess I twisted around or something, because the next thing I knew, a girl was leaning over me, smiling.
Hello there. Feeling better?
Well, I guess so. Am I supposed to be sick?
Well, no, not if you feel all right. We were beginning to get worried about you. You didn't seem to want to wake up.
We? Who's we?
Oh, Dr. Dunlap and all of us.
Well, what happened to me? Well, why am I in a hospital?
You've been very ill. Don't try to think about it, Mr. Lewis. Just get well.
You're, Amy, aren't you?
That's right. Good for you.
Amy. How did I know her name? Why was her face so familiar to me? I tried to think, and suddenly I remembered. I'd been dreaming about her. In one dream, I was up to my neck in quicksand, and she was trying to save me. She was crying, and her tears fell on my face, and she kissed me. That would have to be a dream, wouldn't it? Still, as I looked up into her eyes, it seemed very real. I could almost feel her lips. I dozed off, thinking of her, and when I woke up, Dr. Dunlap was standing beside my bed.
Well, Mr. Lewis, Miss Adams tells me you're bright and snappy this morning.
Yeah. Any reason why I have to stay in bed?
Oh, none at all. If you feel able, we'll get your clothes, and Miss Adams will take you down to the solarium, and you can sit in the sun. Now, how's that?
The solarium was a big glassed-in veranda where the patients sat around and took it easy. Played cards and read and talked. It was quite a crowd when we walked in, but nobody seemed to notice us. Amy, Miss Adams, introduced me to a girl who ran the newsstand. Her name was Ella. She sold cigarettes, candy bars, magazines. I sat down over to one side and looked the people over. Nobody seemed very sick, but they said silly things and laughed a lot. One man acted like he was catching a ball and throwing it to second base. Then he'd argue with the umpire over a bad decision, and suddenly it hit me, like a smash in the face. This wasn't a hospital. It was an insane asylum. I jumped up, but Amy put her hand on my arm. Dr. Dunlap appeared out of nowhere and pushed me back into the chair.
Easy, Mr. Lewis, easy now. Don't get excited.
I'm not excited. I just found out where I am, that's all.
Let's go up to your room and talk it over.
Talk what over? I'm in the wrong place. Maybe I'm a little sick, but I've got all my buttons. Get me out of here.
Mr. Lewis, please, you're making a disturbance. Go along with
Miss
Adams.
Let loose.
Doctor, I can manage.
Then please do it. We'll have a riot here if he doesn't quiet down.
Mr. Lewis, you don't want to get me into trouble, do you? We were getting along so nicely.
When she put it that way, I let them take me out of there and up to my room. But then I put up an argument, demanded to see the head man. Amy backed me up, too. She said she was sure I was okay and didn't belong in such a place. Dr. Dunlap hit the ceiling. They had a battle with Pip. He slammed out of the room, and she had a fit of crying. But the net result was that I was taken to the office of Professor Bird, the man who ran the asylum. He was a strange little guy, with a head cocked to one side like he was listening to something nobody else could hear.
Ah, Mr. Lewis, feeling better?
Why does everyone ask me that? Yes, I feel great.
Good. Do you remember me?
Should I?
Well, not necessarily. What seems to be the trouble?
You just made a mistake, that's all. Got the wrong fellow. I don't belong here.
Well, that's strange. Your commitment papers seem to be in order.
I don't care about that. Listen to me.
Mr. Lewis. Let's discuss this calmly. We're not in the habit of picking people off the streets haphazardly. Someone had to sign you in. Who was it, your parents?
My folks have been dead for years.
Your wife, perhaps?
She doesn't know I'm back in America. Probably thinks I'm dead. Come on, Professor, stop stalling. You've got it all on that paper.
Never mind this paper. Tell me about yourself. Were you in the war?
No, they wouldn't take me. Blood pressure or something. I went to Burma for the International Oil Company.
Oh? How was it in Burma?
Pretty rugged. I was there for 3 years. I'd be there yet, only I fell in front of a bulldozer and got my leg crushed. They shipped me back to San Diego, thinking they'd have to cut it off.
Well, fortunately, they didn't have to, huh? Did your wife know you were hurt?
Funny you should ask that. No, she didn't. You see, we used to go to dances a lot.
I see. You didn't fancy yourself with a crutch.
Does anybody?
But after you were discharged from the hospital in San Diego, did you communicate with her then?
No, I wanted to surprise her. She thought I was still in Burma. I took a train for Boston, arrived on December 23rd, a Thursday.
Yes?
So I went home, looking for Helen. She wasn't there. Somebody else lived in the house. She'd sold it. Knocked me a twister. I was born in that house. My grandfather built it. And it was gone.
Where was your wife?
Helen? She was in Fitchburg, working in a defense plant. But I didn't find that out until I ran into an old pal of mine that night. He almost keeled over when he saw me because everybody thought I was dead. You know, not hearing from me for more than a year.
And did you go to Fitchburg, see your wife?
No, I didn't want to see her right then.
Why not?
Oh, I was upset, I guess, about her selling the house. Besides, I'd been away more than 3 years. One day more wouldn't hurt. So I checked into a hotel, the Beacon House, room 305, I remember. I stretched out on the bed and tried to think things out.
Yes, yes. You were lying on the bed and...
Hmm? Oh, well, I fell asleep, that's all.
I see.
No use telling him how I laid there, thinking of Helen and wishing I'd gone on to Fitchburg. How I kept seeing her face like a great big painting on the ceiling. He'd think I was nuts if I told him how I could smell that queer perfume she used. And the feeling I got that she was there in the room with me.
And how long did you sleep, Mr. Lewis?
I don't know. What woke me up was someone knocking on the door. I got up and opened it and... That's all I remember.
Who was it at the door?
I don't know. It's just like the lights went out. I don't remember a thing until I woke up here this morning.
I see. Do you know where you are?
No.
This is a hospital for the mentally ill. This is the Flowerdale Hospital for the criminal insane.
Criminal insane? I'm not insane, and I'm not... I've had a blackout, that's all. Does that make me a criminal?
Oh, no, it's the other way around. The crime caused the blackout.
Crime? What crime? What did I do?
I can't tell you that.
I'll say you can't. You've got the wrong man. And you're afraid to admit it.
I wish that were true for your sake, Mr. Lewis. However, I attended your trial. The state called me as an authority on mental diseases. It was at my suggestion that you were sent here for treatment.
How? How long do I have to stay?
Until I'm convinced you are no longer a menace to society.
All right. Give me a test. I'll get out of here in a hurry.
I've just given you a test. And you failed badly.
Why? Because I can't remember being in trouble? Well, that could happen to anyone.
No, not in your case, Mr. Lewis. Your mind has drawn a certain... a curtain across something it doesn't want to remember. The crime you committed is buried in your subconscious mind. Until you can remember everything that happened from the time you opened that door down to the present moment, I shall have to detain you. When you remember your crime and the reason you committed it, you can walk out of here a free man.
But you're pretty sure I won't do it, aren't you? Okay, I'm going to fool you. Dr. Dunlap, Miss Adams, you're witnesses to what he said.
Understand, Mr. Lewis, I'm interested in reasons.
You'll get everything. You're a man of your word. I'll be on the street tomorrow. Come on, Miss Adams. Outside in the corridor, I felt so relieved, I threw my arms around Amy and gave her a big kiss. Then we walked hand in hand toward the stairway. We met a couple of nurses, and Amy stopped to talk to them. I walked back to Professor Bird's office and listened at the door. He and Dr. Dunlap were still talking about me. I heard them mention my name. I opened the door real easy so they wouldn't notice it.
Why, he's been a walking zombie. He couldn't talk, had to be fed, bathed, and put to bed like a child. I'm really very encouraged. It wouldn't surprise me a bit if he recovered.
Don't be absurd, Dunlap. Such cases never recover. You'll struggle a few weeks, try to remember, then chuck it.
Oh, by the way, I think I ought to know. What did he do?
Well, understand, I don't want it noised around. But you'd better tell his nurse that he's dangerous, especially when he thinks he smells perfume.
Oh, yes. Yes, he did mention perfume.
For your information alone, the man's a killer.
Really?
A rattlesnake. He strangled a woman with his hands, and he'll do it again. Here, read his history.
That's all I heard, because Amy picked that moment to come and get me. But I'd heard enough to realize that something was terribly wrong. Me? A killer? Why, I'd never hurt anyone in my life. I'd been framed. Somebody had committed a murder and pinned it on me because I'd lost my memory and couldn't defend myself. The only way to get free was to recall everything that happened, every single thing from the moment I opened that door. What if I couldn't remember? What if I never remembered? It meant being kept here, locked up for life, for a crime I didn't commit. Nice spot for an innocent man.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Robert Young in The High Wall, a radio drama by Bradbury Foote from his play of the same name. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
That is the first portion of The High Wall, starring Robert Young on Suspense. From 1946, we'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first, let's take a break on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. This is our, how many shows is this, Lisa?
75.
75.
Yep.
Wow.
Right? I'm dumbfounded.
It's a lot of shows. Yeah, it's a lot of shows.
It's a lot of time we spent together.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And this is a tribute to Robert Young, who, as I said earlier, did a lot of radio, a lot of TV, a lot of movies. He was Marcus Welby, M.D., on television. I remember watching Marcus Welby, don't you?
Yes, I do.
With James Brolin.
I remember him.
Who now is married to Barbara Streisand.
Oh, and I was, that's right. And I was also remembering I watched Father Knows Best as well.
Yeah, Father Knows Best.
He was the epitome of, fatherhood.
Absolutely. You know, back in the Marcus Welby days, I think he would have loved Mies Meals. You know that? Because Marcus Welby was a busy guy, right?
Yes,
he was a doctor. He was He was a physician. He didn't have time to cook meals.
No.
Or you know, prepare for the meals. I mean, he had time to cook them.
Well, he had a perfect...
If somebody would prepare them like Mies Meals does.
Right.
So Mies Meals, folks, is one of our sponsors, and they have a special offer for you listening, which is dinner for two, delivered to your home, absolutely free. Fantastic offer. But Lisa, tell everyone about Mies Meals.
I love Mies Meals. I use Mies Meals every week. I go to the website and I choose the dinners that I like because I'm really picky and I only like certain things. Not only do I choose the ones I like from their selection of maybe 12 items, but I make specific requests, like I don't like this or I don't like that, and they're always very accommodating for my requests. They deliver it in a cooler with ice packs every Monday right to my door by messenger. And then I have these ingredients and a little cue card that tells me how to cook things. They normally take about 20 minutes, maybe 30 tops to cook. So I'm literally taking the ingredients that I've already prepped and chopped and ready to be prepared, put into the pan, the stove, whatever it is, and ready to be baked.
And fresh as can be, too.
Fresh, healthy ingredients. Yeah. There's no more, what am I making for dinner tonight?
Right. No more ordering.
No more running last minute to the grocery store trying to figure out what it's going to be. And certainly no greasy takeout. This is the perfect thing for me and my family. I love having a home-cooked meal without really all of the work involved and the time involved in preparing it. And I usually make this with my daughter, Jillian.
Yeah.
We make it together, and we order it together. So it's sort of something we do together. And I have to say, they call it the magic of Mee's Meals. And it really, there is something magical when you make a home-cooked meal and you eat together at the table. And that's exactly what Mee's Meals does for
us. And what I love about it is it's so good for you. It's all healthy ingredients, and it's all prepared. And even I can make it. And it tastes delicious because of the cue cards.
There's no subscription. It's just week to week. Yep. You want it 1 week, you order something. If you don't want it 1 week, you don't order.
Right.
It's just...
You order when you want, you don't order when you want.
Yeah, there's nothing more to it. And we are so sure that you will love it that we want to give you the opportunity to have dinner for free on us.
Yep.
And so what you do is you go to the website and you choose any dinner you want for two and enter promo code radio at checkout, and it will be absolutely free. You'll have it delivered to your door next Monday, and we hope that you'll do that. Post pictures and let us know what you thought of this healthy and delicious entree.
All right, the website is Mee's, which is spelled M-E-E-Z and then meals.com. So Mee'sMeals.com. Now, this week I ordered the blackened Baja salmon and avocado taco. And then I also got the, I'm trying to think, I think, oh, the Mexican steak taco bowl. Those
right,
are
that's
the two.
For next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right, I'm going to get it Monday. Yeah, I'm going to get it the following Monday.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And so if you go to the website, there's like 10 or 12 items for dinner. Check it out. And then order your dinner for two delivered to your home absolutely free. There is no cost. Just put the promo code radio in there.
You know,
everyone listening can do it.
Yeah, it sounds too good to be true, but it's not. I promise. It's absolutely free. So we really hope you'll try it, and we also hope you'll let us know what you think.
Go to Mee's.
We're sure you'll love it.
Meals. M-E-E-Z meals.com. Mike, what did you order?
I'm taking a look at the site right now. I actually ordered the broccoli cheddar chicken bake.
Yeah. Oh, I've had that. That's really, really good. Very good. What did you get, Lisa?
I like the sweet potato kale and rice bowl. It's got a peanut sauce on it. It's delicious.
Yeah, well, all the food I've had so far, and it's been a couple of months that we've been doing this.
Yep.
And I've enjoyed every single meal that I've had. Really, really good.
I have as well. It's awesome that we can have all these different things on the menu because you like the fish. I don't like the fish. Mm-hmm. And
I don't like the fish.
Right. And Lisa
but
likes
Carl
all
loves
these
the
other
fish.
Things.
I love it. I love the salmon.
I mean, you love the steak.
I like the steak. I like the chicken.
There's something like that on there all the time. Mexican flatbread.
But it's not that you don't like their fish. You just don't like fish. Right?
I just don't like fish in general. I don't eat fish.
Because it is as fresh as can be. It's unbelievable.
No, it's nice they give you all these options. So for the picky eaters like me.
All right. So take advantage of this special offer. It's a limited time offer. You can order dinner for two absolutely free delivered to your home. Just put the promo code radio. Go to Mee's, M-E-E-Z, meals.com. All right. Let's get back now to Robert Young starring in The High Wall on Suspense.
And now Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Robert Young in The High Wall. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
When I promised Professor Byrd that I'd give him the whole story the next day, I was absolutely sure I could do it. But I couldn't. I couldn't remember a single thing that happened during that lost time. Absolutely blank I was. I racked my brain for a clue, lay awake nights torturing myself until I nearly had a nervous breakdown. Then, after about 3 months, I gave up. Just like Professor Byrd said I would. Chucked it. When I did, a great feeling of relief came over me. It was like a heavy weight had been lifted off my chest. Amy noticed the change in me, and I told her the reason one night very late when she came in. She didn't like it a bit.
Bob, no, you mustn't give up. Don't stop trying.
Amy, there must be some easier way to get out of this place.
Escape, you mean? You can't do it, Bob. There's a high wall.
Yeah.
Well, there is another way. A sure way. I can go out feet first.
Feet first? Bob. Bob, you wouldn't do that.
I'm not going to spend the rest of my natural life in this insane asylum. If there's no other way to escape, I'll go out, like I said, in a box.
Suddenly, she was crying like a kid. Helen used to cry like that. It never struck me before, but Amy was a lot like Helen. As I watched her, it almost seemed like she was Helen. I guess I got a little mixed up because I put my arm around her and lifted her face up to mine. For a second, I seemed to be holding Helen. Then I got things straightened out in my mind, and I stepped back. Sorry, Amy. I guess I got a little out of line.
That's all right, Bob.
I wouldn't want you to think I was, well, you know.
No? Why not?
Hmm? Well, you're going to be Mrs. Dr. Dunlap.
No, that's off, Bob. There's somebody else.
Oh, who is it? She didn't answer. Didn't have to, I knew. She stood there looking like she expected me to do something about it, but I didn't. Then she beckoned to me and made a hush sign, and I followed her out of the room. The ward was quiet. Everyone was asleep. We tiptoed into the solarium and shut the door.
I suppose you know this is liable to cost me my job.
Look at that moon.
Bob, you wouldn't really do anything to yourself, would you?
Why not? I'm not doing myself or anyone else much good locked up in this place.
Bob, dying isn't the answer.
Yes, it is, Amy. Dying is the answer to everything.
Oh, Bob, don't talk like that.
You know, in Burma once, in the jungle, I saw a snake right close to me. A king cobra, it was. I stood perfectly still, hoping it hadn't seen me. I didn't breathe. Then finally, I couldn't stand it anymore. I made a quick jump, but he got me. Right through the leg, here. It was a swell chance to die. But I didn't want to. I crawled through the jungle to a first aid station, and I managed to pull through. For what? I'd have been better off to die right there.
Oh, no, no.
I kept on talking like that, hardly knowing what I was saying, because I had a queer feeling that I was telling it to Helen and letting her know what I'd gone through for her. Helen always wanted security, and I went out there to get it for her. Those oil companies paid big money.
Bob, if you could only remember who it was when you opened that door.
Yeah. What's that perfume you're wearing?
What? Perfume? You know we aren't allowed to use perfume.
Funny, I could swear. Lean closer. Of course you are. It's that same stuff that...
Go on. Why don't you?
What?
Kiss me. I want you to.
Sorry to interrupt, but we do have rules here.
Hold it, Dr. Dunlap. The light isn't necessary.
Go to your room, Mr. Lewis.
That's all right, but don't throw the hooks into Amy. It wasn't her fault.
Never mind, Bob. I can defend myself. Go along.
I knew she could handle him, so I went up to my room. Besides, I had something on my mind. While I was holding Amy in my arms, I had a vision, I guess you'd call it. I saw Helen. She was lying on the bed. The doctor was bending over her. The room was crowded with people. Everyone was tense, frightened. Then the doctor straightened up and said, "She's dead." Helen, my wife, was dead. I remembered it now, distinctly. But that was all. I couldn't remember how or why it happened. It was just like a photograph. Nothing led up to it, and what happened after was perfectly blank. But the fact that Helen was dead didn't seem like a surprise, exactly. After a while, I heard Dr. Dunlap come up and lock me in. He hesitated outside the door like he wanted to come in and bawl me out. Then he went away. The next thing, Amy was shaking me, trying to wake me up.
Bob! Bob!
Huh? What's the matter?
We're sunk, Bob. He was furious. I'm discharged, and you're going to be put in another ward.
By the louse, he can't get away with it.
Listen. Shh. I know how you can escape.
What? How?
Ella quit her job. She's leaving in the morning. Her car will be parked in the driveway outside the solarium. All you have to do is get in the car, lie down on the floor, and pull a rug over you.
Oh, Amy, that's screwy. How would I get outside? The solarium door is always locked.
That's it. Ella's going to unlock it before she turns in her keys.
Yeah?
But I'd be seen.
No, no, they'll all be in church. It's Sunday, Bob. Oh. The minute they start to sing, open the door and slip out. Oh, Bob, it's the chance of a lifetime. Ella leaving makes it easy. She'll drive right through the front gate and they won't even stop her. Oh, Bob, say you'll do it. I can't go away and leave you here.
Well, what did I have to lose? Besides, she started to cry and carry on, so I said, all right. And the funny part of it was, it did work. I'll bet we were 50 miles from the asylum before they knew I was missing. Ella picked up Amy at the edge of town and hit for the open road. We kept going. The girls got me a hot dog at a roadside stand and kept on. We began to wonder where we'd spend the night. I didn't know where I was, but Ella said she knew of a little motel, one of those places where they don't ask any questions. It was late before we found the place. We took two bungalows, the girls in one, me in the other. I got them settled for the night and then started to leave. Amy followed me outside.
Bob, just a minute. Goodness, it's dark. Where are you?
Here.
Oh. You forgot something, Bob.
Oh.
Oh, Bob.
You're sweet. Why, you're trembling like a leaf. Scared? It
could be that. We've been very lucky all day.
Yes. But I think we'd better split up tomorrow.
Oh, no.
Don't you see? They're only looking for me. They don't connect me with you girls, but Dr. Dunlap's no fool. He's probably figured it out by this time. If we travel together, we're sure to be caught.
No, no. If we separate, I'll never find you again. Bob, don't you want me?
Amy, don't talk like that.
If you're still thinking of Helen...
I'm not. She's dead.
Oh. You know.
Sure. But who told you?
Dr. Dunlap.
Funny, never mentioned it to me. What else did he tell you?
Oh, Bob, she isn't here anymore, and we are.
I pulled away from her and walked across to my bungalow. I guess she thought I was sore.
Bob?
I wasn't. It was just that I knew I couldn't make her understand. It was something I couldn't explain to anyone. Helen wasn't gone. She'd never be gone, not to me. I opened the door and went in. The bungalow is a crummy little place. It reminded me of that hole I lived in Burma. I was groggy from driving all day. Amy had started me thinking of Helen. I laid there on the bed, remembering things. The night I met Helen. The first time we danced together. Our wedding. Our honeymoon at Jack Pomeroy's cottage in the Berkshires. I didn't know Jack very well then, but she did. Those were happy days. What you don't know doesn't hurt you. I was happy afterwards, too. Each time I forgave her, we'd go on another honeymoon. She called it starting over from scratch. But I never should have gone away. That's what did it. She couldn't take it. Well, I'll go up to Fitchburg tomorrow and we'll patch things up. Someone's knocking at the door. That's funny. Nobody knows I'm back in town. Hello?
Bob, let me in.
Who is it?
Bob, I want to talk to you.
Well, I'll be... Who told you I was here?
What?
Come in.
Bob, listen, I was talking it over with Ella, and she thinks you're right.
Oh, I get it. I met Sam Bradley today. He must have phoned you.
Bob, you're half asleep.
Or maybe he phoned Jack Pomeroy.
Who in the world...
That's the answer. You and Jack want to beat me to the punch.
Oh. No. No.
Why didn't Jack come with you? Didn't he have the guts?
Easy now, Bob. Let's sit down and talk.
Get away from me.
Very well. I'll have to call Dr. Dunlap.
Get away from that phone. Sit down. Better sit down. Merry Christmas, Helen.
So, that's it. All right. I'm sitting.
Who did you say you'd call?
Dr. Dunlap.
Is that a new one?
Or Dr. Hoffman. He'll give you a nice cold bath.
That's supposed to be funny. What do you want here, anyway?
Well, you've been sick. I thought you might need me.
Need you? I never needed you. I know it now.
All right, then maybe I need you.
And that's a lie. Because I happen to know what the score is. Sam Bradley told me. What about my home? Somebody else is living in it. What a rotten deal. I'm fighting snakes and mud and slime, sweating it out in swill piles and wondering if I'll ever see daylight again. And you're here in Boston having the time of your life on my money. You didn't want me to come back. But me, like a fool, I used to drop off to sleep thinking of you and then pick you up in my dream. I could hear you laugh, see you dancing, smell the perfume in your hair. I talked to you and you answered me. We planned things we'd do when I got back. And all the time you were hoping I'd never come back.
Bob, dear, don't cry. Don't cry. Come on, let's go talk to Ella.
Sarah.
I'm only trying to help you.
You helped me enough. I promised Bradley I'd kill you when I found you. I've got to go through with it.
Bob, I love you.
Oh, not frightened, huh?
You won't hurt me, Bob. I love you.
The last time you begged for mercy.
Bob, I'm Amy. This is Amy. I'm Amy. Don't do it. Bob.
I was pressing my fingers into her throat. She died game this time. Didn't kick or make much of a struggle like she did before. It was almost like she wanted me to do it. And yet, as long as she lasted it, she seemed to be begging me with her eyes not to do it. It didn't take long. Then she went limp and I let her fall to the floor. When I let go of her, I kind of lost track of things. Another blackout. I woke up about a week ago. It's taken me this long to get things straightened out. It's winter now, my nurse tells me. I think she's lying, but I can't prove it. You see, there's no window in my room. The walls are padded, and the furniture's nailed to the floor.
Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines, R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
Robert Young may soon be seen in the Hal Wallace Paramount production, The Searching Wind. Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Hume Cronin as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
At the end of that show there, they said that Hume Cronin is going to be on the next show. There's a name you don't hear too often, Hume.
Hume.
Hey, we just had a baby. Let's name him Hume.
Maybe that's short for something?
No, Hume.
Like
H-U-M-E was his name. Hume Cronin.
Humey.
Yeah, hey, Humey. Yeah, like you don't hear Harlow much anymore, like Harlow Wilcox.
No.
You don't hear Harlow anymore. Hume.
No.
I don't know anyone else named Hume.
Names do go through generational
phases. This is true, yeah. That was The High Wall starring Robert Young on Suspense from June 6, 1946, sponsored by Roma Wines. We polished off a whole bottle of Roma a little while ago. Lisa had a couple bottles just by herself.
Yeah.
Served on CBS. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa, wake up.
It's hour three, WGN Radio
awake
Theater.
Over there? Hey, she looks pretty awake.
Me?
You were yawning
hey,
up
who's,
a storm
I was
going to
say, who's not, who won't stop yawning the whole show?
Lisa has
Carl
been yawning.
Carl Amari has been yawning.
She's been yawning
for
and making
two
me yawn.
Hours.
All right.
All
this
right.
is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. It is 1:08 on a Sunday. Happy Mother's Day. And this next show we're going to tune into in just a little bit, it's a very religious show. It's called The Son of Man. It's the story, kind of told through all of the apostles, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the story of Jesus. It's very cool. I think you're going to like it a lot. Robert Young stars, and also Herbert Marshall is in this play, and he is who we are spotlighting tonight when we come back here. We're back here in 20 hours. We'll be back here at 11 o'clock till 2 in the morning playing a spotlight to Herbert Marshall. We're going to listen to Herbert Marshall in The Man Called X, and then on Suspense and the Screen Guild Theater. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actress stars in the horror film The Conjuring 2 as she travels to London to help a single mother in a house plagued by malicious spirits.
Ooh, I like scary movies, Lisa. All right, if you know who this actress is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. You'll win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza, the best pizza on the planet. Now, here's a hint. She plays Norma Bates on Bates Motel.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Yeah, right.
Yep, that's it.
Working with Lisa, we all go a little mad sometimes.
Back at you, Carl Murray.
All right, so if you know who that actress is, call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back at the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
And that is the truth. We've got Nikki on the phone. Hey, Nikki.
Oh, hey, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful.
So
I love you guys.
Oh, thank you. This was a tough one.
Thanks,
so
Nikki.
We're hoping that you can help us out with the celebrity.
Well, with the Bates Motel, it's and they kind of helped me out too.
Yes.
I never get her name right, but it's Vera Farmiga.
That is right.
Yeah.
You see, you got it right.
Too.
We know it's right. Nikki, thank you. You got it right, and you're a winner. You've won $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, Home of Chicago's Best Deep Dish Pizza. And I hope you have a delicious pizza on us. Check out their menu at loumalnati's.com.
Oh, wonderful. Also, I just want to add one more thing.
Sure.
She was really great in The Orphan. I don't know if you two have seen that one.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I was just reading about that just a few minutes ago. She's a great actress.
Do you watch Bates Motel, Nikki?
I watch it here and there.
Yeah. It's my favorite show on television.
It's your favorite show on television?
It's my favorite show on television, yes. Bates Motel.
He's got too much time on
his
hands.
No, it is. I mean, other than UFC, I'm a big UFC lunatic. I watch every fight, UFC fight, MMA. Lisa's an MMA fighter. She doesn't tell anybody.
He's not even speaking English.
She does. She's an MMA fighter. That's why I don't give her too much guff.
I'm pretty tough.
Yeah, but all right.
We
well,
need some of that Roma wine.
Yes.
Now that we could use
Lisa
right about now.
Lisa polished off two bottles all by herself. She didn't
big
share.
Big drinker over here, yeah.
Thanks, Nikki.
With a
straw, exactly. Well, happy Mother's Day. Thank you so much for calling in.
All right, it's time for the CBS Radio Workshop. This was a sort of an experimental theater. It came very late. Came on the radio in 1956. You know, radio drama had kind of come and gone by this time. It was on for 1 year. It was billed as radio's distinguished series to man's imagination. It was really a revival of the earlier Columbia Workshop, and it used some of the same writers and directors, and it had dramatizations of works by Robert A. Heinlein, Sinclair Lewis, Edgar Allan Poe, Frederick Pohl, James Thurber, and it used L.A.'s best actors, including William Conrad, Elliot Lewis, Paul Frees, Hans Conried, and others. This time, in 1957, Robert Young stepped before the microphones along with Raymond Burr, Herbert Marshall, Victor Jory, and Vincent Price. They presented a passion play with music by Bach. This was sustained over CBS. Let's go back to April 21st, 1957, for part one now, The Son of Man on the CBS Radio Workshop.
From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination. The Theater of the Mind.
Mm-hmm.
The CBS Radio Workshop presents The Son of Man, a passion play.
The words of the Passion and Resurrection are taken from the four Gospels in the King James Version of the Bible. The music is the music of Bach. There are four speaking voices. The words of St. Mark are read by Herbert Marshall. Those of St. Matthew by Robert Young. St. Luke by Victor Jory. And St. John by Vincent Price. These, with the music, make up the play. That is to say, the music has an actor's part, for Johann Sebastian Bach was himself a witness, not to the event, but to the meaning of the event. Of the four speakers, Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, we know little beyond the words they wrote in their Gospels. These words, however, have much to say of their characters as men and of the differences between them. Mark speaks with the simplicity of an old man remembering what he himself had seen, the voice of one who had taken part in great actions. The Gospel according to Mark.
The beginning of the Gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. As it is written in the prophets, "Behold, I send my messenger before thy face, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make his paths straight." And John did baptize in the wilderness and preached, saying, "There cometh one mightier than I after me, the latchet of whose shoes I am not worthy to stoop down and unloose."
Matthew speaks with the force and authority of one who respects the past, one who has labored and lived among the people, listening long to their stories and putting the great narrative together with love and humility and passion. The Gospel according to Matthew.
The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations. And from David until the carrying away into Babylon are 14 generations. And from the carrying away into Babylon unto Christ are 14 generations.
Luke's voice is the worldly but profoundly believing voice of a man who had journeyed much in the great cities of the Roman world. He was a cosmopolitan, an urbane and sensitive observer to whom the narrative was true not only for the province of Judea, but for the Roman Empire and for the world. The Gospel according to Luke.
For as much as many have taken in hand to set forth a declaration of those things which are most surely believed among us, it seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write unto thee, in order that thou mightest know the certainty of those things wherein thou hast been instructed.
John testifies not by the witness of his eyes, but of his soul. John is the mystic, the penetrator, to whom the past exists in the present, and the present exists in eternity, and whatever was, still is, and always will be. The Gospel according to John.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him.
The Son of Man, the Passion and Resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ.
When the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed innocent blood. And they said, What is that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed, and went and hanged himself.
Then lead they Jesus from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment. And it was early, and they themselves went not into the hall of judgment. Pilate therefore went out unto them and saith, What accusation bring ye against this man?
And they began to accuse him, saying, We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king.
Then said Pilate unto them, Take ye him and judge him according to your law. They said unto him, It is not lawful for us to put any man to death. Pilate therefore said unto him, Art thou a king then? Jesus answered, Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Pilate saith unto him, What is truth?
Then said Pilate to the chief priests and to the people, I find no fault in this man.
And the chief priests accused him of many things, but Jesus yet answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled.
Now at that feast the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner, whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto them, Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ?
So they cried out all at once, saying, Away with this man, and release unto us Barabbas.
Pilate saith unto them, What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ?
And they cried out again, Crucify him. Then Pilate said unto them, Why, what evil hath he done? And they cried out the more exceedingly, Crucify him.
When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it.
And he released Barabbas, that for sedition and murder was cast into prison, whom they had desired, but delivered Jesus to their will.
And the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium. And they called together the whole band, and they clothed him with purple, and plaited a crown of thorns, and put it about his head, and began to salute him, Hail, King of the Jews! And they smote him on the head with a reed, and did spit upon him, and bowing their knees, worshipped him.
And after they had mocked him, they took the robe off from him, and put his own raiment on him, and led him away to crucify him. And as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. Him they compelled to bear his cross.
And there followed him a great company of people and of women, which, alas, bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus, turning unto them, said, Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children.
And when they were come unto a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull.
Into a place called the place of a skull, which is called in the Hebrew, Golgotha.
They gave him to drink wine mingled with myrrh.
They gave him vinegar to drink. mingled with gall. And when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink.
And when they were come to the place which is called the Skull, there they crucified him.
All right, that's the first portion of the CBS Radio Workshop. It's a passion play called The Son of Man, starring Robert Young. Cast also includes Raymond Burr, Herbert Marshall, Victor Jory, and Vincent Price. And music by Bach, sustaining over CBS. We'll get back to the CBS Radio Workshop in just a few minutes. Stick around. Lisa Wolf, we have a Facebook page for this radio show, do we not?
We do.
Yeah? And what about it?
It's at WGN Radio Theater, and we are on it. We check our comments, posts, like. We post pictures of all of the stars in the shows, so you can check out some of the great pictures there. We've got a few pictures of Carl in there. What else? We have our schedule gets posted in there, and any requests or suggestions, that's the perfect way to get a hold of us.
Right, so just hop on Facebook and go to WGN Radio Theater. And please do like us. We'd love it if you'd like us. We also have a website for this show, which is WGNRadiotheater.com. And when you click through to the main website, you can download 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time, absolutely free, just by being a listener of this show. It's our way of thanking you for tuning in. You know what?
What?
You are an example of a person who got to do what she always dreamed about doing. When Lisa Wolf was a kid, this is not, I didn't know you when you were a kid.
This is true.
This is a story, and I think Sean would like this story. Sean, Lisa, I've known Lisa since 2009, and she and I have been hosting a radio show together. We've been on WGN for over a year now, but we also do another radio show, and she told me when she was a kid, she still does. She calls up radio stations and tries to win prizes and things, right?
Well, I simply do it not so much for the prize, but I thought it would be really cool to hear myself talk on
the
air.
Radio.
So isn't that ridiculous?
This is someone who wanted to be,
so,
to hear herself.
So I walk around with my tape recorder in my house, you know, with like we used to push
a little
like
Radio
play,
Shack.
Like a little Radio Shack tape where I would push play and record at the same time, a little microphone, and I'd go around and talk to people and interview them.
Really? You interviewed people as a kid?
Like, yeah, with that's your, what I with did your, like, with my Radio Shack.
With your feet, the
with
little
a cassette feeties. Player.
The pajamas with the feeties?
Yeah,
you
know,
walk around?
The Dr. Duttons,
yeah.
With the cassette player so I could go back and hear.
That's something.
And hear. And
now she's on the biggest station in the world.
No, it's, so it's is the true. Feeling the same now?
Yeah.
It's even
oh, yeah.
better.
No, look
it's
at the
even
smile.
Better.
Because you know what? I honestly walk in this room and I smile and something about my face turns a little bit reddish pink.
Yeah.
My cheeks turn pink when I get here and I smile and I truly, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I am truly grateful and feel so appreciative that I get to work here at WGN and with you.
And
that's
the,
that's true.
Look at the dimples she has. And that's from smiling so much that it actually
I can't help
indents
it.
Her face with these gigantic dimples. Because
I'm seriously
she's
so
always smiling.
Happy to be here. No, I'm not always smiling, but I am always smiling when I'm at WGN.
You've upgraded your recording apparatus.
That's
yes.
Right. That's
no
true.
More Radio good, Shack.
Good. That is for certain.
No, but you know what? This is America. And you know what? If you want to do something in life, right, you work hard. You've always worked really, really hard. Lisa's a super hard worker, and she has attained the goal, her goal, and that is to be on radio. But not only
just any radio.
She's on the biggest radio station on the planet.
And together. You yeah. and I have worked toward this place. We have been on other stations and
right.
doing other shows, and we worked really, really hard, and we worked to get to where we both dreamed of being, and
very
that's
much
right
so.
Here.
Absolutely. But so congratulations.
And you
You're
too.
A testament that you can gain anything you want in this world if you work hard enough, if you work hard, set goals, work hard, and just push till
and,
you get
there.
You
know, there's a little bit of luck involved too.
Of course,
I'll give you that.
Of course,
but
and you know what? And it's paying it forward too. You want to treat people how you want to be treated. It's very important too.
Always.
And now here you are sitting on.
And again, loving
WGN.
Loving our listeners too. We really do appreciate that.
Oh, so there you go. All right, we're tuning into a very very cool episode of the CBS Radio Workshop. It's a religious story called "The Son of Man," starring Robert Young. Let's get back to it right now.
And it was the third hour, and they crucified him.
And they crucified him, and parted his garments, casting lots. And sitting down, they watched him there.
Then said Jesus, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do."
And with him they crucified two thieves, the one on his right hand and the other on his left.
And they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, "Thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross."
Likewise also the chief priests mocking said among themselves with the scribes, "He saved others, himself he cannot save."
The thieves also which were crucified with him cast the same in his teeth.
And it was about the sixth hour, and there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour, and the sun was darkened.
And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani?" That is, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?
And some of them that stood by, when they heard it, said, "Behold, he called Elias."
And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. The rest said, "Let be. Let us see whether Elias will come to save him."
And Jesus cried with a loud voice and gave up the ghost.
And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent, and the graves were opened.
And when the centurion saw that he so cried out and gave up the ghost, he said, "Truly this man was the Son of God."
And all the people that came together to that sight, beholding the things which were done, smote their breasts. And all his acquaintance and the women that followed him from Galilee stood afar off, beholding these things.
When the even was come, there came a rich man of Arimathea named Joseph,
which also waited for the kingdom of God.
This man went to Pilate and begged the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered.
And Joseph bought fine linen and took him down and wrapped him in the linen and laid him in a sepulcher which was hewn out of a rock.
And he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulcher and departed.
And the women also which came with him from Galilee followed after and beheld the sepulcher and how his body was laid.
And there was Mary Magdalene and the other Mary sitting over against the sepulcher.
And they returned and prepared spices and ointments and rested the Sabbath day according to the commandment.
Now the next day, the chief priests and Pharisees came together unto Pilate, saying, Sir, we remember that that deceiver said, while he was yet alive, After 3 days I will rise again. Command, therefore, that the sepulchre be made sure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away, and say unto the people, He is risen from the dead. So the last error shall be worse than the first. Pilate said unto them, Ye have a watch. Go your way, make it as sure as ye can. So they went and made the sepulchre sure, sealing the stone and setting a watch.
And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome had bought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre.
Very early in the morning,
when it was yet dark,
and they found the stone rolled away from the sepulchre.
And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And he saith unto them, Be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him.
He is not here, for he is risen, even as he said.
He is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spake unto you when he was yet in Galilee, saying the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified and the third day rise again? And they remembered his words. And they returned from the sepulchre and told all these things unto the 11 and to all the rest. And these words seemed to the disciples as idle tales, and they believed them not. Then arose Peter, and ran unto the sepulchre, and stooping down, he beheld the linen cloths laid by themselves.
Then cometh Simon Peter following him, and went into the sepulchre, and seeth the linen cloths lie, and the napkin that was upon his head, not lying with the linen cloths, but wrapped together in a place by itself. Then went in also that other disciple, which came first to the sepulchre, and he saw and believed.
Now when Jesus was risen, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene.
Mary stood without at the sepulchre, weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre, and seeth two angels in white sitting, the one at the head and the other at the feet, where the body of Jesus had lain. And they say unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? She saith unto them, Because they have taken away my Lord, and I know not where they have laid him. And when she had thus said, she turned herself back and saw Jesus standing, and knew not that it was Jesus. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? Whom seekest thou? She, supposing him to be the gardener, saith unto him, Sir, if thou hast borne him hence, tell me where thou hast laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus saith unto her, Mary. She turned herself and saith unto him, Rabboni, which is to say, Master. Jesus saith unto her, Touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say unto them, I ascend unto my Father and your Father, and to my God and your God.
You have just heard the CBS Radio Workshop's production of The Son of Man, the story of the passion and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ. All of the words were taken from the four Gospels of the New Testament and were arranged for this broadcast by Archibald MacLeish. The words of St. Mark were spoken by Herbert Marshall, those of St. Matthew by Robert Young, St. Luke by Victor Jory, and St. John by Vincent Price. Introductory words were spoken by Raymond Burr. The music was extracted from the B minor Mass and the Passion, according to St. Matthew, by Johann Sebastian Bach. The Son of Man was produced and directed in Hollywood by William N. Robeson.